I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room. Boom, 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 boom. So you wanna be a rider? Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminished and the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed. In the Red Room, we let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Red Room.
Now, to segue
another
to a part
pivot.
Two,
watch her.
We're going to do a pivot because okay. We got Paul here.
Yeah, we got to get
and
him.
And Paul, we got to get him in here. And Paul, I don't know what you can talk about or what you can't talk about.
Oh.
What but you been up to?
It's been a minute, and we got to catch up.
Yeah.
I go, don't mention no names about the bitches, but if you could just...
I will not mention any names. If you want to spend your 4 minutes Googling, you can find all the names.
How can we educate the people where you still feel good about it? That's all.
So...
I got your back, brother.
Thank you.
And I'll fight it. I'll fight an executive.
Okay. So.
I was here. I think I very briefly spoke about it. I talked more off mic about it. I had this idea... Mm-hmm. That I'd been sitting on for a long time. It was based on a true story of the first all African American squad of detectives.
Damn,
in St. Louis,
badass.
Missouri. Yeah, after the turn of the century, mm-hmm. They were known as the Negro Specials, and they were basically the Black Untouchables.
Damn.
And
see, this,
can
see,
you see that?
Wait, listen.
That TV show?
Oh, that's all you got to go. You got to. That's a mic drop.
This podcast came out, and I was like, "Where's this show?"
Right. Yeah. Like that's like the mic drop pitch. It's like it's the Black Untouchables
is,
mic drop,
yeah. And,
then it's like
pitch.
Yes.
And so it was. So I had the first thing I did, I wrote a feature version of it. Because as soon as I learned of the story and I started researching, I was like, why has Denzel not ever played this guy? Why has Oprah not played Madam C.J. Walker? Mm-hmm. You know, our mm-hmm. country's first ever female millionaire was Black.
Mm-hmm.
No one talks about it, you know? Why haven't I seen this? And so I was going to do it as a feature. I wrote it as a feature. I sent it to Jeff and, you know, my little circle of readers. Mm-hmm. And one of them was this writer producer and he and I sat down to give me notes, and I have the recording still on my phone of that day, and we mm-hmm. start talking, and he's like, there's just too much here, and you haven't, you know, for 2 hours it's kind of too big, and you've got a little bit of a bunch of stuff instead of one focus story. And I was like, it's almost like it'd be better as a TV series.
Mm.
And he goes, wait, are you pitching me the Black Untouchables as a TV
really?
series? And I said, I guess I am. So that led to so that was the end of 2015, mm-hmm. and 2016, February of 2016, we went out. So I had myself, John Rogers was who mm-hmm. I'm talking about, mm-hmm. was attached as an executive producer. We had Barrett Naluri as an EP and the director, and we had a young up and coming actor named David Oyelowo, who was not going to star in it, but he was going to EP and, you know, maybe play a recurring role or something because he's backed up movies for the next mm-hmm. 3 years. So we went and pitched it to 8 networks last February, and we had 4 of them bidding on it.
Wow.
And it was basically the mic drop pitch of Black Untouchables, and it's true.
And you got David sitting there, too.
And we had David, and that does not hurt when mm-hmm. you have that man in the room with you. Mm-hmm. And so we chose a network that was the one that we kind of all sort of laugh like, they're doing TV. But they were starting this new original programming channel, supposedly, and they were going to throw all this money behind it, and they just loved it, and they believed in it, and we were going to launch this new channel for them. So it was all, you know, ice cream and hot dogs. And then the development process started.
Mm, here we go. Tell the kids.
Here we go. Tell the babies.
And the notes started to come in, and it started to be, where's the white savior character? And it started to be, can the Black characters not all be so nice and the white characters not all be so mean? And can there be less Black characters and more white characters?
Wait till they get to Tulsa.
Well, brother.
Damn. Go ahead.
So it was it was brutal because this was, like I said, I've been sitting on the story for 6 years. I got the man sitting across from me is the guy. I never felt worthy of writing the story. Mm-hmm. You know, that whole thing. Look,
me,
I'm
I remember
a,
you told me a little
bit. Let me cut in on that real quick, too, because this is a little bugaboo for mine. Paul showed me the very first version of this, which was intentionally a feature. Mm-hmm. My reaction after reading it was, this is a show, because you can't tell all this in 1 2-hour period. This is ridiculous. But as he just said, he's like, I'm a white guy. This is a black story, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, look, this thing's been sitting around since the 20s.
Ain't nobody touched it.
Plenty of black people had access to this. I am a fairly knowledgeable black person. Mm-hmm. I have had access to this. Mm-hmm. Ain't none of us made this. Step up. Your thing. Plus, it's an American story.
Right.
It's a perfect American
story. Just make them fucking
people. That's a St. Louis story.
And I said, and I will say this again, anybody has problems with a white guy writing this kind of material, please refer them to me. I will handle it.
Yeah,
it's fucking bullshit.
I had the same conversation with Bradford about him directing, you know, Tulsa. It was the same conversation. I was like, dude, ain't nobody else jumping on the same jump.
I told Paul, and I'll tell anyone who puts in great material. That was the thing. The material was honest. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter.
Right.
Who's writing it? I mean, maybe on some weird cosmic level, you would prefer this to have been a Spike Lee movie. Maybe some people would prefer that. But Spike's had plenty of time.
Yep.
All these guys have had plenty of time. Denzel's had plenty of time. Wills has plenty of time. This story is history. It's just sitting there. And this guy found it while looking for something else. And it grabbed him.
Yep.
And he's got
to write it. That's when you need to write it.
That's when
you need to write it. None of us have been the space bitch.
Step into my office.
Still writing space.
Step into my office.
Why can't he write that?
Right. So. You got a problem with Paul writing this? Step the fuck into my office.
And on that note, Paul.
So on that, that's a nice little setup for this. So then I pushed back on those notes, and we had a real back and forth, and went round and round, and. I mean, there was a big penalty attached to this. I mean, they outbid three other networks, so that tells you what kind of deal was done. And they ended up saying, no, this is the best part. The reason after all this and unintentional but incredibly racist notes they were giving that I can tell you about off the mic. They said, it's just not historical enough for us. That was the
ladies and gentlemen, if you could see the looks on the faces in this room right now, you would all be laughing.
Yeah.
Because they deal in alternative facts? Is that maybe? Well,
it's like here's a quick thing. The way my first line in the pitch, when we pitched it to these networks, and it was it's the best pitch I've ever done. And yeah, I had David sitting on my right and all that, but my first line on the pitch was, there have been 4 American policemen that have ever been awarded a special commendation from Scotland Yard for outstanding policing. And they are Alan Pinkerton, Elliot Ness, Frank Serpico, and Ira Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
Who the hell is Ira Cooper?
Right, and I mean, that right there was just, you're in, you know? And then, he was the Jackie Robinson of policemen, of detectives. And so anyways, it fell apart. I went into a deep depression this last fall about it. And the silver line, in January, I went to New York and I was blessed enough to see David Oyelowo do Othello with Daniel Craig.
I tried to see that so bad. I couldn't get a ticket. It was like a lottery to get a ticket to
that
show.
Right now, just thinking about it. My life changed that night watching that.
Wow.
David Oyelowo.
But Daniel Craig.
Oh, Daniel Craig.
The two of them.
And it was in a 99 seat.
I was just about
theater.
To say, it was an intimate space. You couldn't get a ticket.
See? Crazy, right?
It was life changing. Like at the end of this 3.5 hours.
They were working.
It was the New York Theater Workshop.
Wow. $100 a week type of motherfucker.
Yeah, but also what it is those two guys and all the rest of them in the play have to be like gladiators, because what they really want was to have the audience about an inch away from them.
Everything
has to be super.
They were as close to me as that robot over there.
Shut up.
That's acting.
At the end of the play, 3.5 hours, I'm on my feet, you know, as everyone else is, and I'm clapping, and tears are streaming down my face, and I look down, I just am like, you're looking around for somebody to have, you know, and three people down from me in my row is Peter Dinklage, and really? He's got tears streaming down his face, and we just have this like, can I like it? We just saw the same thing.
Well, and the thing is, we all know the story.
He paid for that ticket. He didn't do no lottery. Peter Dinklage was like, I got some money.
I had to do a lottery, and I lost a lottery, and I couldn't get in.
We started on a $1,600 Hamilton ticket. That's ridiculous.
I saw that show too.
What's interesting is that everyone knows the story of Othello, but for some reason, the way it was done.
It was brilliant because what he did, I mean, I don't want to go off on this tangent and waste time here, but what he did, Sam Gold was the director, and it was brilliant. The whole thing takes place in the Army barracks, modern time.
Oh, I was going to say, it's a modern version. Okay.
Afghan War. Okay. But the entire text is the original Shakespeare.
Oh, interesting.
Except for one moment. It's going to sound crazy, but it was amazing. It worked. About 40 minutes into the play, 45 minutes into the play, and there's a whole thing they did with lighting, which was just insane. But it's all this original text until at one moment, they did a lot with cell phones, and a lot of the light was just the actors holding their cell phones and stuff in it, because a lot of it takes place at night in the barracks. And then there's this one moment right in the middle of this play where they break out into Drake's call you on your cell phone.
No way.
Yeah, because he's talking about what's her name and, you know, he's going to see her. And thank you. And and they go in and they're all singing and dancing.
Really? Oh, my seconds. God.
And it worked.
Wait, Daniel Craig was singing and dancing?
Daniel Craig.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah,
yes. And it worked.
Legs have lost their
mind. And then they were right back in to the story. And it was, oh, God, it was life-changing. It was. Oh, but anyways, so I went there to talk to David.
Mm-hmm.
And he and I talked for a couple hours after that night, and we started to find out not only, you know, we had the problem with the network and their notes, then we found out the two of us talked and there was some subterfuge going on with some other people involved with it. And we both were like, you know, the story's too important. Oh, and the other thing that happened, this is what's really sad. Once the network that bought it gave it back, we called the other networks that had bid on it so fiercely. And we're like, hey, this is available. And this is one thing I can't stand about Hollywood. It's like they were willing to pay millions for this, you know, 8 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And now suddenly they're like, oh, wait, they didn't want it? What's wrong with it? And it becomes its tainted goods, you know, when somebody puts it in the turnaround.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we went back to USA. We went back to HBO, you know, Netflix, all and they're just like, I don't know.
Wow. You go to the BBC.
Well, so here's what's happening. So okay. David and I have talked, and he has said, and this is real unofficial, so nobody listening tell anybody.
So none of y'all, I better not see nothing. We know who you are.
Don't be tweeting.
Don't be tweeting.
We're going back to the original. We're going to do the feature version, and as long as schedules work, he's going to play the man. He's going to be Ira Cooper, and we have this one lady.
I bet they're green like that motherfucker want that.
Yeah.
Well, somebody's going to be Madam C.J. Walker. You're going to be very happy about.
But see, this is another thing that I think people aren't seeing this. The movie, you can make the movie.
Yeah.
You can go find money and make the movie. Television and all the streaming shit, you are under the foothill of these other people telling you what you can and can't do, got to hear the notes, blah, blah, blah. If you want to do the movie, if someone's got $20 million, and a lot of people have $20 million, don't think they don't. You know
you got $20 million.
Well, I'm not saying you, but you go make the movie, then you go make the movie that you want to make.
Yeah.
And don't suffer from this shit people saying, well, we got to have this and we got to have that. It's like, no.
See, that's the entrepreneurial I'm making the movie. Spirit of independent
what you're
filmmaking.
Saying right. Almost the words that came right out of David's mouth.
That yeah.
Say that again. Say that again, Paul.
I said what Chris is saying is almost verbatim the words that came out of David's mouth that night when we talked. Mm-hmm. Like. Let's just go make the fucking movie.
Yeah. Right. The thing about Except it is that when you're making your own movie, which is what you do a lot, right? When you find the money, you're also the producer. That's a whole different sort of hands-on process than what Hollywood structure works, how that structure works. Sorry.
You keep looking that way.
The problem becomes, at least from a writing point of view, because Paul and I really were exclusively writers to begin with, right? The strength of your writing is stronger. Your position as the writer is stronger in the TV structure because television, at least up until now, it's actually shifting, I think, slightly more towards film in some ways in this respect. But until relatively recently, if they bought something, they're buying it to make it because the margins are too thin, right? So all your hardest part is getting them to buy it, right? Once it gets bought, you're in charge of it, basically, because they bought it because of you.
Right.
But in movies, at least in the traditional sense, not in the non-independent sense, I write the movie, they buy the movie, they pay me a stack of money, and then they kick me out, and they bring in six other people. And then if I'm lucky, they bring me back at the end for a final polish just to make sure all the crap that they liked didn't get polished out during the process. So the rational brain in the writer doesn't lend itself to what you've described.
I mean, I get that.
But you're right, ending with you're right. And I think the climate makes it more attractive to go that route.
Well, I mean, because I look at it as like there's so many. I mean, you know, there's a project. There's a project that my brother and I pitched like last year to this woman she was at a network, and she was like, I don't like the fact that the husband cheats on the wife. And I was like,
because it's personal.
But I said there. I turned back to her. I said, but you know, we want this to be on your cable division. That's what people do on cable shows. And I was like, you know, if we were making this movie, I wanted to hear this line, you know, because as long as you are able to make it so that the audience is not like, fuck this, I'm walking out from that, then you're fine. Yeah. You know, you kind of expect it, you know, but that's not the play that happens with television. And I think that's just like I don't know. It's just such a
weird
thing.
Well, their job is to say no.
They want to say no.
They have to, safe.
And I think the thing that hurts people a lot with film is, they don't have to do anything. You know, there's no, like, we don't have to put Forrest Gump out. Let's wait 15 years developing it. Mm-hmm. You know, but they got to put out these shows because for whatever, they get these penalties and all kinds of stuff like that. There are no penalties.
Right.
Don't make my movie. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's a weird kind of dynamic about what you want to do and what you should be doing and and what's ultimately better for you. Like, as an artist, I mean, Paul, I feel your pain. Were they going to buy this and all of a sudden start shanking you from behind and stuff like that? But it's like...
Let me ask a question.
How dare you, Hillier?
Hold on, because it just occurred to me, like, wait a minute. We're talking to... I mean, we have lots of, you know, working writers who listen to the show all over the world, but there's lots of baby writers who listen to the show, too. How do you get it back?
That's what I was going to ask. You mentioned the depression, and I was like, how do you get out of that?
How do I get it back personally? Or are you talking about business
standpoint? How did you get the script back?
Okay, yeah.
You know, because a lot of people don't know
the rules to that. The only reason, I was talking about the emotional part, too.
Yeah, there's that, too. Yeah, of course.
The business part of it, the only reason that I got it back is because there was a bidding war, and I was able to literally say, and you're going to give me a ham sandwich every Monday.
Got it.
I at that point... Everybody was trying to outbid each other, and I just wrote my own ticket. And thank God I have a badass lawyer who got it written in, which is not normal.
Pay or play, bitch.
That if this doesn't happen, then all rights revert back to me and only me, not the five executive producers.
Wow.
No, it is mine to do with what I want, and that is not normal.
No.
Because usually it's dead. It's dead, you know. It's like we gave up copyright and whenever that was.
That's interesting because in every movie contract I do, I'm putting the reversion rights in. That's got to be in there.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be because I feel there's like, you don't sit on it. Mm-hmm. Don't sit on it. I mean, if you're not gonna do anything about it, don't do that. Now, there's a story. There's something in the guild too about reversion rights. I can't.
But it's after like a certain amount of years.
How many?
Yeah, it is.
Seven.
Yeah,
I believe.
Oh, baby.
No money though has to be paid back.
No, you have to pay. You have to buy it back.
No. But after seven, it's
got
like,
it. Got it. Yeah, yeah.
You don't have to buy it back.
I'm not sure what the whole thing is on that.
Limitation.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but it's a long time.
Back.
But you have to check your deal and see. But yeah. And check with the Writers Guild. But there was something about that you can.
Until he sees the $200,000 again.
I think y'all don't know it's about the negotiable features than it is, and TV wants to own it. You know, there's that language in these contracts that say, in all the universe, like you literally can't go make a show on Mars without paying Sony.
In any form of anything that may one day be developed. And I'm like,
so that was how I got it back, was just because I got lucky enough that we were able to ask for anything at the end. And how I got it back
now, I wouldn't recommend that to everybody. Paul is... on a Cody
right,
B
but
level.
I think it's well, good for every writer to know.
You
to
should know if you could at least try. Yeah. But
well, ask the question. Remember, he very specifically says there was a bidding war going on, which means everyone's trying to one-up each other, and the person who really is the oil is the person who created the thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He can say, I want only green jelly beans in my dressing
room. That's true. And then also the Hilliard's point, though, is something that I learned in this and why I was with one of the big four agencies then, and I am no longer with them. And it was 80% because of this and how they acted in this during this deal was they were like, you know, shut up and take it. You know, this is a great thing. You know, every time somebody came in, they're like, hey, that's great. You know, and no, you can't ask for that. And I'd say there were a couple of weird things I was like, and they're like, you can't ask for that, man. Mm-hmm. You can't. That's crossing the line. And my lawyer's like, you can ask for anything you want, man.
All they can do is say no.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I recently listened to a podcast. It might have been Nerdist Writers Panel with Koppelman and Levine, where they were walking through Rounders and how, you know, they didn't know what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they were, you know, they got an offer from Weinstein to option it. And Koppelman was on an airplane and Levine just goes, no, we want spec money. And Koppelman says, if I had been there, I would have said, you're insane, man. Levine didn't know. He's just like, no, man, we want spec money. Pay us the money.
Right.
And you know, because if they had optioned it, that movie probably would have never gotten made.
Right.
So you have the power until they say no, but you should always
go for it. Always ask for it.
And also, the more money you make them spend, the more likely they'll do the project.
That is true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? Because then it's a waste otherwise.
So how'd you get your mojo back?
Yeah.
Because I was crushed. Like, I was like, they gonna have fabulous black people in clothes looking fierce.
And it was like, and the story is so much better if you think of the story over 10 or 20 hours.
The history,
or something.
Yes.
That's all I feel for.
That part of it hurts, but I'm so fueled now to do, like, you know, the most badass feature version of this that I can. Mm-hmm. And what happened was I go back to that night in New York. And it wasn't just sitting with David, but it was experiencing that play. Like everyone, I've read Othello, I've seen the Brano, I've seen, you know, productions of it. And I was like, I got to go sit through 3.5 hours before I can talk to David.
Mm-hmm.
And what I experienced, and I was feeling really shitty then, and I put a bunch of weight on over the winter, and
you're still
I was just
sexy,
like,
Paul.
I got it back for you.
You got your sexy back.
I took all that weight off. That's the kind of friend I am.
Seeing that level of art and that level of performance and that level—I mean, from the lighting design, the directing, the acting—you know, Shakespeare's words—and it was so inspiring to me. And then to sit with that beautiful man who, you know, was like 6 nights a week and twice on Sunday was going
Jesus
to this place
Christ.
That when I
He's
saw
exhausted.
Him and what he, where he got to by the end of that play was so emotionally draining for me just watching.
Hmm.
And then here he comes half an hour later in his sweats and he's like, hello, Paul, thank you. Was it okay? Yeah. It
come
didn't
through,
suck.
David.
You know you destroyed it.
This is why I hate the more. No, this is.
And it was just, so I was so, like, that night changed me. Mm. And I, you know, what's funny is, It's sort of happened in the cycle, I'm starting to realize in these last few years, it's life. I went through an absolutely devastating 2015.
Mm-hmm.
I you know, had this personal relationship that I thought was the be-all, end-all soulmate thing, and she cut my legs out from under me, and at the same time, librarians imploded, and I was stuck in the middle of this giant battle between these two entities and had to keep the show afloat, and it was just a disaster. But I came out of that stronger and like, wow, I'm better than I thought I was. And that's when I was like, I'm going to do this show. I'm ready to do Black 22s. UTA at the time.
I love it.
UTA wanted me. UTA had me an offer. I had a full-on offer on the table to be the number two on a giant broadcast show that UTA packages that would have been more money than I've ever made. And they told me, take this gig. Nobody's going to want to buy your show about black cops in the 20s. You need this. And I said, no, I'm going to pitch this show. And they're like, you're committing career suicide if you do that.
Wow.
And I said, well, then I'm committing career suicide because I have to do this. And it led to what it led to in 2016. And then that having the, you know, the rug pulled out from under me after all that. So then that night in New York, I saw that play and I was like, man, it doesn't, you know, it's that, it's such a cliche. But it's like fall down seven times, get up eight.
There you go.
That's right.
And I sat there and I saw that play. And then I talked to David and he's like, you know what Chris said, we'll just go make the movie. Nobody can stop us.
That's right.
And it came, and with the whole thing, you know, with Trump and the world and wherever we are, it's like now more than ever, we have to make new things, you know? Yes. And I am so fueled now, and I'm doing a couple of these other things while he's going off to do a big giant Ang Lee movie right now. And so in the meantime, I have a couple of things going, and I'm even in a better place than I was coming out of the 2015 disaster. Right. Having this sort of like, I got up and I was strutting, and then I got whacked back down. It's like, oh yeah, I forgot. You can always get your ass kicked, right. But it's just how many times you keep getting up. And so that's where I'm at, and I even though I know the story deserves 20 hours instead of two, I'm going to give everything to that 2 hours. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The other thing you can do is that it's a weird thing to say at the end of it because you started with a feature and basically all of your friends said this should be a show. The process of developing the show is going to inform the way you write this new feature. Right. So it's going to be a better feature at the end of all of this.
But also by doing it independently as a feature, you don't, there's all, I mean, you can still do a show after that.
Yes, yes, true.
Be, yes. I
mean, that's very true.
Yes.
Because it's the catalyst. I
mentioned that.
The success of it.
Yes.
Even the non-success, because there's like two movies that are coming out that came out in the last 2 years that they're doing shows off of. There's a movie called Equity with Anna Gunn, which is an interesting little movie about this female investment banker. This okay movie didn't do well, but I think that they're doing it as a show on NBC. And then and then Dear White People, which I don't think did extraordinarily well in the box office, but now
it was okay.
Well, that title, you know, it was going to bring them in.
Yeah. It's like a Netflix show. Yep. So,
which is perfect, I think. Netflix is perfect.
Yeah.
I think this one, but see, I think that Lena told me all along that Justin wanted to do it as a show.
Oh, really? And they went ahead and did it as a movie?
And he couldn't figure out, because he had so much character in there, that he couldn't get it right, and it was easier just to make the movie, you know? And then now he's doing the show. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. Interesting.
And now there's a lull.
I know. It's just the heaviness is thinking, like, you know, for a lot of us who have
this, these, could be any of it.
Because she's passionate. Look, I feel that because, like, with the whole thing when I was doing the Griselda Blanco thing and, like, the feeling of we're so close and then it just pulled the rug under. And sometimes you just want to pack the project away and not, you know, now I can look back at the Blanco project and be like, okay, I'm okay. You know, it's fine. If somebody else does it, it's fine. But when those moments when you think you're so close and it's going to happen and then it doesn't, it's devastating. And as a creative person, you just kind of go to those dark places like it'll never happen again. And, you know, it's just interesting to hear you say, you know, art will save you. Because I'm telling you, when I'm down, art will save you. Like, thank God. Art will save your life.
Eat a bunch of Twinkies.
Art will save your life.
No Twinkies and no couch.
No. No.
It's the one thing that always just gets me. It's like, I'll see, for me, it's paintings. I love paintings. So I'll find a painting or see something that I haven't seen before, and all of a sudden it's just like, it sparks me. It just sparks, you know, like, you know, when the whole thing with Kreger and the thing fall apart, there's this painting called The Barge Haulers of the Volga. It's by this Russian painter, and it's
we need to introduce him to Chuck Rose, don't we?
It's
this crazy painting where it's, you know, set in like the time of the czars, and these people have to, they have to pull a barge because they're too poor to afford a tugboat. And it's such an amazing look at people because the human conditions on display, all these, and it's just like, wow, I just look at it, it's like, it's a heartbreaking painting, but I just loved it. And I was like, I'm going to write something new now. Because that's what art that's what art does for me.
Paintings don't really motivate me too much. Jealousy at times. When I see someone I'm just gonna be straight up. When I see someone sell something or they got a deal, whatever, and I'm like, really? Them? All right, I'm back at the keyboard.
Okay.
You know, yeah, you
I
use
have
it.
A, I have
you
a total it. Competitive nature. Yeah. You know, if we sat here and played Monopoly right now, I need to beat all of you in Monopoly. That's how I roll. So when I see, I'm scrolling Deadline.
Yeah. Marvin Gardens, then you're just not going to.
That is a secret.
Yeah. I don't know. We might need to play sometime.
The
okay.
Dallas.
See how bad it gets.
Place. It's Marvin
oh
Gardens.
My God. Oh my God.
But that, you know what? It's true. Chris was saying, I mean, like that night watching that performance, watching Othello, that was a painting. That made me, when I walked back to my hotel that night and it was snowing, like it's one of those, I was living a memory. Like I'm never going to forget this the rest of my life. And I was, that where you sort of step outside your body and I'm like, you know what? It's not about dusting myself off. I mean, yeah, it is to a point, but it's like, I went so far down the research hole with this and spent so much time. I know these people and what, and I said, like, I literally said out loud on, you know, 39th Street in New York or whatever it is that night, going like, you owe it to those men and women that lived
Why
that
life. Why are you
life.
Trying to make brother cry?
Okay, okay.
I just, that was it. Yeah. I said that. Yeah. I go, I owe it to them. I will never stop. I will never say this thing is dead.
Right.
And, you know, and whatever. Look, I could lose David. I could lose whatever.
Keep going.
I'm going to make this thing because I owe it to them.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing, though, about that is Paul's been doing this a while. We've been doing this a while. One of the things I always caution people about is this is it's a heart project.
Mm-hmm.
Everything should be on some level a heart project. Mm-hmm. Like, you shouldn't write stuff unless someone's paying you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even then, hopefully not. But you shouldn't just write stuff to write stuff. Mm-hmm. And you shouldn't be writing stuff to try and chase a trend or this is the thing that'll get, you know, Miley Cyrus to be in my movie. Like, I mean, I just randomly. I'm just saying, you're not writing so some star will see it and then want to be in it. Right? You're writing it because for whatever reason it pinged you. Okay? But there's a difference between me writing a really cool sort of, this is what I would do if I was in charge of Star Trek story, and the story maybe that's in my novel or one of my plays or something like that, where I would be crushed if I presented it to Let's Make It, and we went for 2 years trying to make it, and then it didn't happen, or worse, the studio takes the project from you, and it's now starring Martin Lawrence instead of Denzel Washington, and it's a slapstick comedy instead of a deep treatment of whatever it was.
Right.
Those projects you have to be precious with because the machine will grind you, so you have to be able to take the grind. It has to be worth it to take the grind. There are plenty of projects that I've come up with and devoted a lot of time to, and they've got into the development process, and at the end of it, they're like, we don't like this anymore. And I'm like, that's because you took everything out of it that you liked.
Right.
You didn't listen to me for the last 6 months, and now it's fucking dead.
Right?
But it didn't crush me. But there are a couple of projects, if that exact same thing, exactly the same time, exactly the same development process, you know, you wouldn't see me for some weeks. My wife would be bringing me hot chocolate and I'd be sitting in bed watching Smurf cartoons or something for months because those are in my heart, not just my head.
I think that's the important thing to realize here for all of us. I mean, we all go through this.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you are not alone.
So he stacked up enough chips is what I'm saying. You've done enough stuff.
Sure.
Although it hurts, it takes a while, but you can metabolize it and get rolling again.
You can only get better or completely stop.
You got to walk it off. Yeah,
I recommend
you give up or you got to walk it off.
To the baby writers listening, yes, write that project, but don't let it be your first project you try to sell. Put that in a drawer, save that for project number 3 or 5 or 10 because the machine will start to grind as soon as you sell something. And if your heart can't take what the machine might do on that project, just don't put it up there yet.
I was just thinking about something you said earlier about dealing with your agents and stuff. I'll never forget, I used to sit at the coffee shop with Lance Black and we would talk all the time. And when he was writing Milk, we used to talk about him writing Milk and he would go to San Francisco and yada, yada, yada. And he left his agency and went to the agent he's with, at least back then. I'm assuming he's still with him. Because the other agent was like, why are you doing Milk? We need to find something big, something, you know, that everybody would want to see. And he'd be like, that's the thing that's moving me. He went to San Francisco, was on the set with one of his friends who was shooting something. Their agent was there. And he said to him, so what's your passion project, Lance? And he was like, you want to know? You know what I mean? And he told him, I'm here doing Milk. He was like, really? Interesting. And they get into a conversation about family and all this other stuff. He signed with that dude.
That's
his agent, whatever. And look what happened. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I totally see where you're going. And
it's
you
not
did the
agency,
same thing.
It's the agent. And I did the exact same thing. They wanted me. I was part of a big giant machine. It was cool to be able to say, hey, I'm ripped by so-and-so. And they just wanted to check me off that list and get me, look, we have the package show. This is going to be, you know, 27.5 a week for you and all this stuff. And it's like, they didn't give a shit what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And they also told me, like, you know, you're a TV guy. You can't do features. We talked about this a little before the cast started. And I was just going to go agent. I have a manager who I've been with for a long time that I completely love and trust. And as I said, my lawyer is just a killer. And I was just going to be happy. And then this agency, which is a smaller agency, sought me out. And they came after me. And the first meeting we had, they weren't like, here's what we can do for you. They were like, we love your writing. Tell us, what do you want to do? What have you not done? What have you, what's inside your heart? It's exactly what you're saying, Hill. And that was like, it's not the agency, it's the agent. It's you want somebody as passionate about you and what you want as you are about your own stuff. They're going to sell you better. You're going to, you know? And now I have this stuff happening that, had I not gone through all the shit and
sometimes
all that.
Sometimes you got to go through some fucked up shit to get back.
You have to go through the shit.
You know?
Well, and that's why you shouldn't sign with the first person that comes along and says, oh, I like your writing, sign here. I want to be your manager, be your agent. Like, take the time to figure out, do they get you? Do they get what your passion projects are?
Because that's a mistake we made, and it really meant
Oh, boy.
Because they're just trying to make a quick buck.
Especially when you get a manager who thinks they used to be a writer, and they know how to tell you how to do some shit.
That's the stories you can tell. Here's the thing. It's interesting that what you're saying, Paul, because and what you said, Harriet, about Lance is that there are people in this business who aren't the creatives who have a passion for it. And those representatives who everyone, they have the worst, you know, as a class, they have the worst reputation. But there are ones who really love it because I feel that they get something out of it in a way that the same way that we do and the same way a producer does when he sees a script that he's never I want to do this but I think that's rare and I think it's rarer now because of the younger people coming up in the game because they don't have the same kind of you know I tell somebody the other day I mean it's just like you can't be 20 to 25 right now and tell me that movies have really drawn you to this industry because the movies in the last
current
15
movies,
years are shitty. You know, I don't believe that. I mean, no, I can believe that, but then I had to look at you with pity because
wait, you like bored? What's wrong with you?
You know what I'm saying? We see stuff that all of a sudden makes us go, oh my fucking God, you know?
Yeah.
Like, for instance, you know, there's a friend of mine, he's telling me a story about a friend of his, he's a big writer on a lot of big CBS shows, and he was getting notes from this executive, and he had a couple Godfather references in the pilot. And this the executive was under 30. And she was like, who's going to get this?
Wow.
And so he said,
world.
And so he said, I'm not getting on you because you're a woman.
He had to clarify. Let me clarify.
Smack you.
Yeah, okay.
You deserve a smack.
You're going to have to go home right now and watch The Godfather, and then we'll talk about your notes. Because otherwise, I don't want to hear it. Wow. And then he said, you know, she came back on Monday.
She's like, oh, Jesus Christ.
And she was like, oh, my God, this is the best movie, and blah, 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 blah. And
how do you get that job and you've never seen?
Yeah, but I mean, people keep asking the question of, like, how come you're getting all these British actors? How come you're getting all these Australian actors or whatever? There is a quality in American culture right now, which is all about the shortcut. It's all about the end result. And I'm not going to say that my parents were somehow prescient to raise me to think that the long way is the better way. They just didn't raise me to think there was an option to the long way, right? So I see a lot of young people, and occasionally I do these little seminars about writing and stuff, and I ask these questions, and I'm like, there's no shortcut. There's no secret. Yep. Those people that you've heard those story about, that person that's your age that became the head of a studio, of which there's been one ever, you know, that's a lightning bolt, and that is news. That's why you know about it. All the stories you don't know about, that's what normally happens, right? Those overnight successes, all of that stuff, the up and down of it. And you have to be living life to be able to create life in your art. You can't be just in it to get – life is not
American Idol. This life is not American Idol.
Here's the interesting thing, though. I hear this a lot. I hear a lot of people say, like, oh, I moved here 6 months ago, and then I got an agent, and I got on the show.
Sure.
But I never hear them say I stayed.
You know what I'm saying?
You can get in there easily first.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't want to say easily, but you can get there.
There's so
many
first.
Or you can get your gig off Twitter or something.
Whatever the fuck. But it don't mean you're going to stay.
But
you know
the thing
what I mean? The longevity thing is the thing that I'm going to interrupt
you. Discipline or understand the discipline. I mean, the setback that Paul took could crush someone who's 24.
Yeah.
I thought I had
And he's a seasoned freaking writer.
You know, and it's like, and then you're going to quit because you don't know that that's the game.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, getting your teeth kicked in on projects you love is the game for almost everybody. I mean, and you know what? Everyone will tell you there's a movie they have that didn't work.
Everybody. Spielberg, all of us at this table have had
Hitchcock, The Big People,
yes,
whatever, you know, your favorite writer is, Gilroy, like Aaron Sorkin, whatever, they all tell you the story. It happens.
Because the answer is almost always no. That's the thing that people never seem to want to grasp. Mm-hmm. Publishing, comics, film, music, whatever art form you want to be a commercial artist in, where you want to make your bread and butter off of the art you create, understand that what you call gatekeepers, yes, some of them are cultural gatekeepers and they're dickheads and all that.
You've never seen freaking Godfather.
And that's fine. That's absolutely fine. But it's their fucking money. Mm-hmm. So on a certain level, if you're asking somebody else to give you shitloads of money to make this thing you want to make, they do get some say about how that money gets spent.
Yeah.
However, your job is to always remember you're always in the middle, right? It's the answer is no, because we are the ones who take the risks. We like risk. We live at the edge. That's where we should be living. Mm-hmm. That's how we get the good stuff. Mm-hmm. Their job is to protect the company and their job within the company. So it's safer and easier for everyone who has the thing you want to make your thing to say no to you. Because if they take a risk and it doesn't turn out to be Forrest Gump, that's their ass. That's their job. Mm-hmm. The guy who let Star Wars get away didn't work again.
That's why executives move every two or three years.
People are laughing. But if you almost never get fired for saying no. That guy's unusual because it was Star Wars. Mm-hmm. But you'll get fired for saying yes to the wrong shit. Mm-hmm. And especially if it was your boss who told you to say yes and you said yes publicly and your boss didn't. Your boss is going to fire the shit out of you. Not just fire you, but fire you on deadline, right? On television, right? He's going to call cameras to fire you to make sure the negativity only hits you.
Yeah.
So with that kind of pressure on an executive looking at new projects, of course the answer is mostly no. And you have to be prepped for that. Mm-hmm. And that project, Paul's been on the Black 22s for what now, 5 years? Something like since you first had the idea?
The first time I had the idea was 2011.
Okay.
And then
it's 2017, and he's got kicked in the guts twice.
Shit ain't easy.
So, it goes back to Heiserer's thing, you know? And this goes to an earlier point I was going to make off of something Hilliard said is, you know, people that follow us on Twitter or whatever know very well about Jeff and Paul and their rants.
Do not start any. There won't be any.
But one of the earlier points about you guys made about how this is what kills me, these young writers, these up-and-coming writers that, you know, ever since they started reporting script sales in the early 90s and tracking the race between Shane Black and Esther House, mm-hmm. You know, everybody thought, oh, it's my lottery ticket, you know?
Yeah.
And they come to me and they'll say, hey, I wrote this screenplay. I was like, oh, how many have you written? Oh, I have this one that I'm working on another one. And they want to get in the club. And it's like, or, you know, there's some guy that got lucky enough that sold a spec 25 or 30 years ago and got paid a bunch of money. And then you track their career, and after like a year or two of assignments and other specs and stuff, they're off the grid. Well, that's because, you know what? They weren't good enough to stay employed. There's no other reason. There is good writing finds a home.
And John August stays because he's badass.
The chip that everybody wants is the same. It's a different one slightly, but it's a chip that athletes have. Mm-hmm. They may not like each other, and they hit in the field, or they get on they're getting ready to jump off their little platform or whatever, and they see the competition. There's that wolf look in each other's eyes. They recognize one another. Mm-hmm. I can't confer membership. Your activity confers membership, and then we recognize you.
That should be a t-shirt, too.
We look at you and recognize that you are one of us.
Yeah.
We don't tell you you are one of us. We recognize you already are. So there's no secret chip. There's no handshake. There's no secret back channel door that you're going to get through. I can't do this visually, but if you had a pie chart, most of the pie chart would be red, hard work, and a tiny, tiny sliver of that pie chart, luck.
Wow.
Mm. Well, yes, Jeff, that's exactly right. And the work. But to Paul's point about the career longevity, I mean, you mentioned Shane Black. I mean, Shane Black was super hot in the late 80s, early 90s.
The hottest.
I mean, and then he disappeared for almost 10 years. I mean, it felt like until he did Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Mm-hmm. Awesome movie.
It's like he disappeared. Mm-hmm. And I don't, you know, and who knows what happened. I mean, yes, he's probably working on material and everything like that, but he didn't have a movie made. You know, and Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is not getting made unless he's directing it, I don't think. You know, right. Because he was at the point where he's like, I'm not, because after Long Kiss Goodnight, he was like, can't let it happen again.
Exactly.
You know, I got to do it my way. And then, and who knows all their politics, you know, but now he's doing Predator, he did Iron Man, he did.
He was a fixture, though.
Nice guy.
Coming in.
You know, yeah, I mean, but even someone who was like, who's literally changing the landscape of screenwriting.
Sure.
Had a massive lull in their career.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
That's
correct.
Right.
Yeah.
Correct. I mean, I know some friends of mine who are some of the biggest directors who can't get a movie, who do TV, or vice versa. You know what I mean? Mm. Every year, they got some movie they're talking about they're going to do, and it never gets done. And they're the biggest directors in TV.
And see, that's where I go back to writers are so, we are so blessed because a director could be the absolute best director in the world. Mm-hmm. If they don't have material that's going to get made, they don't work.
Yeah. Right.
Writers, we're the only ones that create. Everyone else interprets what we create.
Good point.
And everyone else needs us for their jobs. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, you know, those guys that you know, they sold a spec 25 years ago and then they couldn't get work in, so now they're charging people, teaching them, you know, the secrets of screenwriting and stuff. That's why don't write your one script and say, where's my Malibu beach house and my office on the lot, you know? It's like, bust your, I mean, the guy who's running this podcast right now is one of the hardest working people in this town. Like you always are doing something, always.
Thank
and
you.
It's you because you don't, it. You're not satisfied.
No,
you're not. Cause we are all in here trying to get, you know, I mean, I never heard of Chris till this podcast and started listening. And was like, well, this cat knows what time it is.
Yeah. And his brother, shout out to him and his brother, Willem. They both.
Yeah. And it's like, you got, power. It's people out there. I mean, don't, if you're trying to become a produced writer, then good on you. Go do that. You can go VOD. You can go online, whatever. If you want to be a screenwriter, if you want to be put this on your tax returns every year that this is your job, then treat it like a job and go to work.
You're right.
Always be grinding. Mm-hmm. Always be grinding. Mm-hmm. Always be grinding. Always be grinding. I can't stress that more than this. Every day, 7 days a week, people are calling me up and they'll be like, hey, where have you been? What are you doing? I'm like, dude, I'm writing. I got this thing to do.
Right, hey, dude, you, the phone is off. The computer is off.
How come you didn't call me back? You know the answer to these questions. It's always the same answer. If I don't come right back, if I don't pick up, I'm either in the hospital or I'm writing while in the hospital.
He's not under anesthesia. He's just taking the pain,
but see,
and he's channeling the pain to
look.
The pain.
Last year, I did this just partly as a joke. But last year, because of what happened to our show, I found myself out of what I consider to be my normal work, and I was lucky enough to have. And they won't like this, maybe, but to work in animation as a safety net, I had built up enough chips that people call me from time to time and say, "Would you come work on our show? Would you like to?" Mm-hmm. Normally, I would say no, largely due to. Agent input, where they were looking down on the idea of working in animation, which I personally do not. A good show is a good show.
Right.
But last year, it was like my wife was like, you can't say no. This year, you can't say no because you don't have a freaking job. You better start saying yes.
Let me just interrupt really quick. Everybody who's successful that I know has decided to start saying yes. Every time we interview
yes.
somebody,
yes.
they start
she
saying
said, you
yes.
Start,
yes.
Right.
Yes.
Now, here's the thing.
Yes.
Last year, on my Twitter... Last year on my Twitter feed, I started posting every time I completed a script that was accepted by the person who was paying me. Mm-hmm. I wrote 25 individual scripts in different media last year. Now, in and of itself, that's sort of a marathon.
I did six and I thought
it's sort of a marathon in a way. But the point is that I was also... It was almost like if you trained all the time just for fun, and then someone said, look, somebody dropped out of the Olympics. We need you, right? And you're like, really? Me? I just run local marathons, man. What are you talking about? You know, but then you come up and maybe you don't win, but you're in the game. Everyone respects you. I came out of that where other writers were like, how the fuck are you doing this? Mm. Right? Is this, are you lying? What the fuck? You know? And what it was I was rolling out of bed and writing. And then I would take a break and eat. Mm-hmm. And then I would go back and write. And then mm-hmm. I'd eat dinner. And then I'd write. And then I'd go to bed for less hours than normal. And then I'd roll out of bed and write. And I did that for 6 months straight. Wow. Now, I couldn't have done that.
Y'all hear that hustle?
Right. I couldn't have done that when I started.
This is a professional writer. Okay. Like, yes. No, we're not stuck. You know, Heiserer is not resting because he got an Oscar nomination. Yes. He, I guarantee you, was writing his ass off today. Mm-hmm.
And this is a thing that I'm not supposed to say because it's not politic to say. Mm-hmm. Prior to me going on this marathon, I met as a co-executive producer or supervising producer mm-hmm. on multiple TV shows and got right to the end on mm-hmm. several of them. And then for whatever reason, not this year. Mm. And so I was ass out, as I used to say, mm-hmm. After what, three months of trying to get my what everyone consider my normal job, mm-hmm. right? I can whine about it. I can blame it on me being black. I can, in some cases, blame it on me not being gay, which mm-hmm. is a new phenomenon. Mm-hmm. I could blame it on not being one of the cool kids mm-hmm. on a particular show where mm-hmm. my vibe was too energetic or something for them. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever. The bottom line is none of them fucking hired me and I got to eat.
Mm. So what you going to do?
So what are you going to do? And mm-hmm. it's not a consolation prize. It's just a way of looking at the world. Mm-hmm. Right. I like animation. I don't give a fuck what these fucking mm-hmm. agents tell me. That it's low grade or whatever, that these, mm-hmm. fuck you, watch some of these shows.
Right.
And right. watch right. some of them. The ones right. I'm working good. On are not little bullshit shows. Mm-hmm. They're like real shows.
Right.
Yeah, that's my secret. That's for the ladies. Look, it's all for the ladies.
Whether it's animation, whether it's comics, whether it's feature, whether it's television, whether it's short stories, whether it's poetry, it's, you are writing, you are keeping your instrument sharp. Right. Mm-hmm. And these people, like recently somebody asked me on Twitter, it's like, hey, I just finished my feature, what would you recommend that I do next as far as getting an agent or you know somebody to look at it? And I said, what I recommend is put it in a drawer and start writing the next
thing. Write the next one.
And, you know, just write, because if that's your first one, I guarantee you it sucks.
Right.
Yeah. And I don't care who you are, you know.
Which you will agree with when you've written script five and go back.
Exactly.
And
read that's
this.
The thing. And like what you said earlier about if you have your opus, the story that's the most personal to you as your first screenplay, don't send that out. Put it in the drawer and write four or five or six others till you get good. Then pull that thing back out,
fix it.
That's exactly what I did.
Better.
My first one I thought was my opus, and then I 2 years later I was like, "What the fuck did I write?"
Thank you.
Exactly. What is that? Whose name is on this?
The ideas you love when you're early, you shouldn't even be writing them because you'll fuck it up.
You're going to fuck it up.
Fuck it up.
You're going to fuck it up.
Really hard to come back and look at it because your mind. I've looked at scripts that I've written years ago, and I'm like, in your mind. All of a sudden gets back into that mode and it's hard to kind of like put it into the current mode. So it's tennis kind of like you have to just junk that idea or do it later.
But there's also, not to interrupt you. But I encourage people to get it out.
Yeah.
If it's there, get it out because you think it might be your opus. But you keep writing, there's more opuses.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? I've had five of them now. I thought it was just that one.
Yeah. Well, it's like, if you look at this, these people that I don't understand, the people that are, you know, maybe listening to this, the ones that are sitting in Starbucks and they're working on the one script they have, or even maybe the, you know, two pilots they have, or whatever small body of work that they keep messing with. Because it's like, how do you... Do you really want to do this? Do you really want to be great, or do you just want an easy ride? Because when you look at, you know, the Roger Federers and the Rory McIlroys and the Stephen Currys and pick any sport you want, do you think Serena Williams, when she got to a level like 5 or 6 years ago, was like, wow, I'm the best there is. All right, I'm going to cruise now.
Yeah.
No, Serena Williams is up at 4:30 in the morning beating balls at this point in her career.
Still.
Like, and you have to...
And
you
training,
have to treat
constantly
writing like that. Yeah. You have to treat filmmaking like that.
Well, the problem is, I mean, because I'll speak to what's going on at UCLA because I'm in the program and it's, you know, MFA for screenwriting. And what I found is they let some people in who are, to me, too young, not life mature yet.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are going out drinking every night. Yeah. And they're like, I'm hungover, I'm getting high. I'm like,
I didn't read my pages today, I was too busy.
How do you have time? same. There's one I heard where it's like, I lost my script. I didn't pay my Dropbox fee.
You're fired.
And so you can't turn. You can't turn into your instructor. And they don't treat it like a job.
I wasn't on time because the bacon free dog.
That's right. The dog ate my travel time.
Paul had an extra.
You know what? Yeah. You know what? Don't listen to them, Annie Mae.
You're right though. And the problem is, it's like anything. I mean, one of my favorite books is. This is a weird segue, but Lisa will be with me. A Wizard of Earthsea.
Oh God, yes. Okay. Wizard of Earthsea. Yes.
And one of the set pieces is there's a central island in this world where all the wizards go. It's kind of like Hogwarts, pre-Hogwarts by decades. But what the interesting description of the town around the place where all the wizards go, where nobody has magic, but they're used to it all the time, right? All the wizards are over here, but we're the people who run the restaurants and the laundries and all that for the wizards.
Yeah.
They're unimpressed by wizardry, right? They're just hanging around. Oh, that's some magic that guy did. Mm-hmm. He's still a punk, you know? Still like stuff like that. In this town, it flips sort of the other way. This is still a kind of an industry town, and the power brokers in this town are not always the obvious. You could be George Clooney's attorney. Mm-hmm. You're a power broker,
right?
Those kids all go to basically four or five schools, right? And they grow up in this culture of, oh, well, you know who was my house? You know, well, I'm dating so-and-so. I know she's famous and everything, but, you know, it's on the down low, but, you know, like that. And they get this idea that, well, it's just a thing. It doesn't take any work. All it means is I have my dad or my mom make a phone call, or somebody I was in a sorority or fraternity with at UCLA or USC or whatever is going to give me that hookup. So I don't have to work as hard as the rest of you slobs. You know, I can get drunk every night. I can play and run around and do all that stuff while you idiots are got your nose to the grind down hoping for that one little chance. And I'm like, I ain't hope, motherfucker.
They also don't understand the time it takes to actually get into the business. They feel like, oh, once I graduate, I should be able to get an assistant job and then I can get in the room. And I'm like, it's going to take
film school messes with people. Yeah, they get entitlement like a motherfucker, dude. It's crazy.
And some of these schools, because, well, our alumni did this, and but that alumnus is not you. You are not Alexander Payne. You are not. Not Francis Ford Coppola.
John August graduated from USC. He did have a script that did really well for him, but he was an assistant for a minute. You know what I mean? So you still got to work from the bottom to the top.
Yeah.
You know what? That's another great point about the assistant thing, because that's especially in television, that is the fastest road in to get a script, is be a writer's assistant and everything. But, and this is something that Poe talks about all the time. I call Jeff Poe because he is the Dragon Warrior.
Also, I'm fat.
But we don't burn favors. You have to have the ability. And like, we've both been on shows and even the same shows where a writer's assistant got a script because, yes, first of all, it's like, okay, you've been a great writer's assistant. Now we will read you. Oh, you know what? You got some chops. All right, here's your shot.
Worth a
shot. And they delivered. They killed it. They knocked it out of the park. Mm-hmm. They now have writing careers. We've also been great assistant. All right, you've been a great assistant. Let's read your stuff.
Not quite ready.
They don't get the shot, and they get offended. Mm. And they're like, "Well, wait, I'm the writer's assistant. That's how it happens." Mm-hmm. It's like, "Well, not with us.
Not a
goal." It happens if you that now you are here sitting with us. Mm-hmm. You get to meet and have this, but you're not ready, in our opinion, and maybe we're dicks, but, you know.
I'm a dick. I am, because, I'll shut up, I promise. The thing about writers is I have absolute love and respect for writers, which means if I'm ever your boss as a writer, I'm going to be a writer's boss.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not stepping up to the plate as a writer, I promise, be the worst fucking boss you ever fucking had.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is a school. It's not a school. This is an arena for gladiators. And if you claim to be one, you better be able to fight. If you can't, you're out. Because we have to win this.
Right.
It's not personal.
Well, I'd say the other thing with these film schools is I feel like a lot of the people who are about to graduate, they feel like there's some minor leagues that they're going to go to in terms of competing for jobs. It's like, no. Once you get out, we're all on the same playing field.
Yeah.
So you're competing against me for a job. You're competing against Paul. You're competing against Jeff. Everyone in this room for a job. And that's how. So in order for you to get a job over me, you have to write better than me. And
correct.
And somehow their minds are thinking, well, I only need to be able to have to do this much. Right. Like, no, you have to do...
Unless your last name is Paltrow.
Ooh, damn.
Well, that's a bad example because she can actually
let her
act.
Go.
A little bit. Yeah.
Hey,
I can't stand legacies, man. I want you to have to compete. Although she can actually act, so it doesn't really work.
Don't name your kids after fruit.
No.
What?
You know, the thing about writers is this is funny. I hear so many stories of people who the assistant is there for a couple years, and they cause problems for the new staff writers coming in. Hmm. But I think it has to do with what you guys are telling me now. It's like these people had their shots.
Well, they're the friend of the showrunner.
Depends on the show.
Didn't get it, you know.
It depends on the show.
I mean,
there are clean. What I consider to be a clean show.
They get bitter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, I'm saying. Yeah.
There's a clean show which has a good writer, strong showrunner at the top. Basically, it's a meritocracy outside of the basic hierarchy. Paul's a number two on somebody's number one, or I'm his number two, or whatever. There's a basic power hierarchy there, but beyond that, it's tell the best story you can, make my show as best you can make it, be helpful. Right? All the basic things you'd think of any mm-hmm. team business, mm-hmm. right? But the unclean show is just cronies. Mm-hmm. So they must follow mm-hmm. the form of hiring. They're going to interview Paul. They're going to interview me. Maybe we even get on staff of various positions. Mm-hmm. But the real equity will be who knows the boss best. Those shows mm-hmm. suck. They suck to be on. And frankly, I think they tend to put out a substandard product mm-hmm. because it's mm-hmm. not based on merit. Yeah. Anything that's not based on merit is going to make a lesser work from mm-hmm. my point of view. Mm-hmm. And I've been lucky enough not to have to directly deal with this very much at all myself. Mm-hmm. But I've heard some awful stories about shows where, as you say, the writer's assistant, who's only maybe going to get one script out of the 20, acts like they're the number three in the hierarchy and isn't checked by the boss. So the other writers are like, well, what do I do? Because right. this motherfucker's talking a lot of shit, and right. he's just the writer's assistant.
Right.
Can't go to the boss because he's the boss's daughter's boyfriend, you know?
The showrunner brings a family member into the room.
Yeah.
And how do you talk to that writer or that assistant at all without thinking?
You can't be a writer at them.
Can't. Yeah.
Which is your job. You're paying me to be my best writer self, but you're not letting me be because of your crony.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's fucked. I hate it. I hate that. Which is why I hate legacies. Sorry, Gwyneth.
On that note.
So, go ahead. Before we close out.
What's up?
Your reading yesterday.
Oh.
Yeah.
I must forget.
I want to hear about it. I missed it, and I want to hear about it.
It was brutal. Oh, my God. That last sequence in that script.
Oh, that part.
The actual story. No, the event was great.
First of all,
we had food.
You rocked.
Yes.
Hey, but let me just say this.
Fuck that. You rocked.
Listen, it was so professionally done. I walked in.
Yeah.
The person that came in the door, she said, would you like a water, Lisa? She knew my name because she had mm-hmm. the picture of my name and a thing. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's how we doing it. Then they had like the intro and they said, okay, we're going to do this. And then kept shit on time, walked us over, had meals. I could have got liquored up, but I had to hold out because I was a narrator.
Liquor was an option.
It wasn't an option.
Well, we couldn't drink.
No, there was beer. You could have got beer.
You go to the bar.
Because I asked for a Cadillac margarita and was told no.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Which you could have gone to the bar.
You have to go to the bar and pay for it yourself.
And that wasn't included for free. Yeah.
I went to the bar and I said, oh, I could get my little tequila because, you know, Mexican food makes you. And I felt like Lisa. And this is those moments where God speaks to you and says, Lisa, Hillier's your boy and everything. But you got professional actors and real directors and real folks in the audience.
87 pages to
and there's 87 pages you got to read. Contemplate. So within a 30-second span, when the woman came up to me, I was going to say, can I get a shot of your top shelf tequila? I said, can I have a Coca-Cola? And I was like, okay. And went in there and got my Coca-Cola. They fed us well. Good company. Actors. Let me tell you. I was sitting next to Mark Valley with his fine self. Oh my God.
He is a good looking man.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. He is so fine.
He's definitely a good looking man.
And he was right next to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, great. And then you had Jay Maher sitting there. And then when they had their lines, when they was going in, like when they the scene when they was going in. Mm-hmm. And I was like, literally, I'm like, and mind you, folks, when you're the narrator, that means you got to read every single thing. You got to make sure. You got to make sure
I was Horace. I knew you was Horace last night.
Like literally, no. Because I was like, yeah, because I forgot. Because, you know, yeah. I've been with familiar with the script from the beginning. Like mm-hmm. when we be sitting in here talking about notes.
The whole story.
When I was like out. Going through the research and like, okay, you and my only edict to you was what? Make it black as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
And be honest.
And put some Indians
and put some native folk in there. And make sure that you show us we want no punks. Because mm-hmm. sometimes you have these movies where, you know, you have these horrible things happen. And it's always like when they show black people,
the
always.
Long-suffering.
Yeah, we're the long, always turn the other cheek.
So
we're so noble. We you know, we take that foot in the ass and mm-hmm. say, thank you, can I have another? Mm-hmm. And I was like, you got to tell the story and be honest. And it mm-hmm. was brutal and it was fucked up and mm-hmm. it was real. And don't sugarcoat it,
yeah.
you know? Yeah. So, you know, thank you for doing that,
yeah.
you thank know, you. And putting the peoples in there.
I want to say something about your director,
sure,
who I was impressed with. I came in late. I'm gonna be honest. Like I came in and you guys,
you weren't that late because we didn't start till like 8.
I know. I mean,
till like 12,
and I figured you guys weren't. But you know, I came in and you guys were on page 4. But the director met me at the door and mm-hmm. was like, "Hey, good. Thanks for coming. You know,
thank you for giving up your Saturday."
Yeah, he was just very that sets a tone.
He's the one who moved me a producer. He was like, "You're on the set with me. I need you to do this and you do that." I was like,
"Well, he's not an idiot."
I mean, just
no.
Like
he said, "I need you."
As soon as you walk in, it was like he came up to me and I'm like,
"It was very professional. It could have been ghetto table read. It really could have.
It could have."
And I've been to some.
It wouldn't if I was working on it. But yes,
I have been to some of those where I forgot to bring my Kindle and my phone. And I wasn't even reading. I was here as a friend to go and listen. Uh-huh. Oh, come here. I'm like, oh, great. Some actors and some, let me hear. It was suffering. And I was sitting in a spot where I couldn't get up and leave. So,
oh my God.
So I felt like I was a hostage.
Yes. I've been in
and there were some actors, some pretty big names in there where I was like, oh my God, I can't get up and leave.
Mm-hmm.
Bitch, why'd you bring me to this? You are not my friend no more. But it was like the tone was set and it was just a really great experience. And just the actors. Oh my God. Like
it
the heart.
It was well cast.
It was well cast. And like, it's difficult. You know, to be a narrator when you have people that good, because you're listening to them go at it, and then I had to stop and oh wait, I got to read the next line, and trying to find that balance.
I was more worried about how you're gonna be able to drink water because you got so much
stuff. No, because pages, and I was like, and that's the mistake I made. I should have just not looked at Mark Valley's gorgeous face.
Well, let me say this.
I was tell me more, Sheriff Bennett.
I was there, and I personally heard that. Had Hilliard and the director saying we might want to talk about a narrator for this project because of the strength of your narration. You even I listening to you while you were reading, I was like, this could be
Jay
someone
Moore
who
came
survived
up to me,
this talking
like,
about
her voice
event.
Is like so. Oh my God,
yeah,
she's the best actor in the whole room.
No, like, he came up to me and he was like, I'm not trying to shine you on. Mm. And first of all, I was thinking to myself, dude, I got to come to one of your shows so you can make me laugh. And I forgot. I mean, I forget
well,
it was Jay Moore. No, I forgot
he
was because
me.
He was so good. Like, he was like one of those characters. Like, he is what, when we talk about microaggressions, when we talk about, especially we talk about historical racism, where you have those characters, and Jay was bringing like that that sinister where it's like, I'm a good old boy.
Yeah, I didn't want him to be.
No, he wasn't like, he was like.
I was pleasantly surprised.
He was not a mustache twirl. It was like that fucked up shit where it's like, God damn it, I gotta survive. Yes. Yeah. And it was just like, and he came up to me, he said that. He's like, I was coming in there because y'all was joking on him when he came in late. Jay, don't listen to them.
He come to listening too.
Don't listen to those people. But he was like, you know, you get into it. And one of the things that when you're narrating is trying to keep people awake. And trying not to get actors to start looking on their phones.
You did something interesting that I noticed. We talked about it after you guys all left. We all went back to the place and had drinks and stuff.
Oh, you got to
wait. Y'all went back and had drinks.
I didn't know we was doing it. I was heading home.
Oh, see, he's a producer now. That's what they always say. They always say. I did not know what the other producers were doing.
And I
just went along.
I was burnt.
I don't want to hear
it.
Blah blah.
But look, you went soon as shifted to Act 3, and the bombing and all this stuff started happening. You went interior. Yeah, you brought us dingy. At first, she was like, and boom, da-ba-da-ba-da-ba.
It was like a radio
play. And all of a sudden, you went, hold on. You did. You like took a breath and you went, boom. And you started, you were like directing it like this. When you, I got her on tape, bitch.
Yeah, it was,
you were like directing. She was like, she was so good, Paul.
Because I was trying to like, how do I get some water? And here's the thing. And I have to,
my inner monologue.
Let you know.
How do
no,
I
have
some
to let
water.
You know this. Because this last week, I have been battling a really bad cold.
Really?
So the night before, when you called me, he says, Lisa, I need you to bring your A game. Mm-hmm. I was already hopped up on day. I had the NyQuil. Okay, and I did have a glass of wine.
Of course,
and a sangria. I had the dogs with me.
It was 2:30 in the afternoon. This bitch already had
the dogs. I had just got off work. I got them kids.
Don't tell us how the sausage is made. I want the magic.
I got them kids away from school. They had their science week. I've been, you know, I've been leading the lion dance, do-si-do. Okay, Buffalo Girl number 4, counting the kids. Where's Bobby? Is Bobby still in the bathroom? God damn it! Get this kid on the bus. You know, what are y'all doing?
Our school seems like a dream sequence from Big Lebowski.
And then we got one lane and one luggage truck's coming through, and I'm trying to direct all this stuff. And the only thing I'm thinking is, Lisa, save your voice. I hadn't taken my flu shot this year. So when I got back to the house, I said, Lisa, you got to drink enough water. And I was already losing my voice anyway. So I was hopped up. So when I called you at 2:30 with my wine in my hand.
Mm-hmm. Sitting by the pool.
And already knowing, Lisa, you're not supposed to mix your liquor with your drugs. But it's Friday.
What has happened to this
phone.
Podcast?
No, listen. And I'm on the phone. And he's like, do it. And I had to like, you know, I was just worried. Like, keep the voice, keep the voice. So I was already like ready.
Oh, you came in ready.
And I was like, and when you have great actors like that that bring it, it just makes it so much easier to just read. And of course, like I said, you know,
Mark
you just.
Valley.
Mark Valley.
Yeah.
And you got it on tape.
Yeah, they're going to put together something.
And not just Mark Valley. There's some other folks in there. And just the voices. And like just the...
Well, the lady that was singing, too.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
That's my girl. That's
she crushed it.
That's Denora. That's
the
girl.
I mean, the people were all...
And she played three people.
Really, yes, at one time.
Did you see her doing that one scene? She went back and forth. I was like,
oh, they killed it. And I mean, some people gave some very fascinating roles. And, I mean, it's just, it's tricky not to be... hated racist, but to play the racism with a little bit of sympathy.
Mm-hmm.
I thought those guys did that. You know? I mean, I thought Peter played that the scales pretty well.
Oh my God! Yeah.
You know, I mean, the guy who played the other black deputy
Gatson.
Oh, yeah, he broke my heart. That guy.
It was, you know, I thought the role you played was Big Joe.
Now stop talking, you know, now. You've lost all credibility.
No. Fuck that. Because it was really important. It was really important for me to have you play that role, because for me,
I couldn't see who you were playing at first. I kept wondering, who is it? Because it was sat in a kind of like parallel.
You know, was me?
Yeah. They were sitting in a bad seat. Had a bad seat. They were straight. They were straight.
Yeah, so I couldn't see. And I was like, who is that? You know. So.
But that was Jeff, and I walked over to Jeff and I pitched him. I pitched you the scene where you were killed, and I was like, I didn't pitch in no dialogue and do any of that. It's one of the things I learned from Pam. She's like, actors like big scenes. Yeah, and I told him I went over there and I told you that, but you remember that scene.
Yes, I do.
And
but that's not why I did it.
Understood. Okay, but I only saw you doing that role. And I know you don't really care about acting anymore, so it was really important that
I will
you
say
said
this.
Yes.
It was fun.
You know,
you're a friend of mine, and I respect you. Mm-hmm. The script was good. Mm-hmm. Like, if it had been what Lisa was just saying, if it had been one of those, like, oh boy, believe me, my schedule would have been crazy full. wouldn't have been able to come along. I would have wished you well, but you know, I haven't acted in any real capacity in 20 something years, and so I was very nervous. I spent the whole first half before the lunch break, like, oh Jesus Christ, you know, because they were bringing their game. Yeah. The kids next to me, there's next to all these young kids, and they came to act.
Yeah,
I was like, well, you know, Mark Valley and Jay Moore, they're going to just walk through this. This is not really the show. They came to act. The young lady who played the little catalyst, Liz.
Oh, she was so.
I didn't know who she was, but she. Yeah.
She's the one in that pimp thing I showed you.
Oh yeah.
She's
okay.
The white girl.
Yeah,
right.
Girl, you got skills.
She's got skills.
But everybody who was acting came to act.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I'm a writer now. Please, why are you?
No, you started turning it up, though.
But,
you started turning it up.
Because it had vibe.
Yeah.
There was a vibe.
See, to me, the scene that really kicked it off was a scene where Jay Moore's character comes in.
Yes.
With shit on his shoes.
Yes.
And I was like, oh. Okay.
That's the end of Act 1, right?
Here we go.
So now, that's been like.
You know why? Because all the actors. When I looked up from the page, I was just reading, you know. But when I looked up from the page, they were all acting with each other. They were hitting the moments. I had not looked at the script until the day before because I'd been doing my other job that I can't talk about because of NDAs.
I know. Right.
But I had been writing, and reading basically up until the night before. I read it once then, read it once in the morning, get the words in my mouth a little bit. And then that was it. These guys obviously had looked at the script and came to play a bit. It's like I always say to actors, if you suck and you're surrounded by good actors, not stepping down. You will step up or you will be fired. Correct.
I mean, who did Gasson's voice? Because that voice was...
Oh, that's Mark Sandler. Listen, soap star.
He was
great. That voice was cognac. Like, I was sitting there, like, I hadn't heard anybody speak. Mm-hmm. So when he first came in there, I was like, okay. And he started speaking for a minute there. I was like, I might be pregnant. I might be pregnant at this moment. Because it came through like, who is this for? Like, it was like, that's when I heard that. I'm like, that's
this is the second
voice.
One. I told you there need to be a Black Twitter commentary of the Oscars play-by-play.
Like, whose man is this?
Yeah.
When Dev Patel showed up, like, whose man is this?
There also needs to be the women point of view when shit like this happens, because men have this illusion that you aren't just like us.
Oh, we're worse. Right?
You're way worse than us.
We are worse.
And therefore comical and delightful.
No, right. It is worse. But the voices, man.
I might be pregnant.
I'm telling you, that voice came through with that bait. I was like,
this one's for the ladies.
This might be my baby daddy.
So my question is, what's next for you guys? Yeah. You did say Reed. What?
So there was an investor there. There was an agent from William Morris there.
What? Really? I wasn't paying attention.
He was in Cognigro. And so they might be repping it. We'll see.
That's great.
And then, so there's an investment. So we're talking about going to three different studios to put the money together. It's going to be a $20, $25 million movie.
Minimum. Mm-hmm.
And then.
That crazy.
The ending.
Ending. Yeah.
Is that true with the fighter plane?
Yes.
Dude, when people see that, they're going to fall out, in a good way. They're going to be like.
All of that stuff in there, his historical, like literally when we were going through the stuff and like Hillier was like, stop sending him videos. We're getting like actual testimonies from survivors.
That's what I'm saying. It's brutal.
There's almost too much. Like there's stuff in there that couldn't even make it in the script that you wouldn't believe actually happened.
We had to totally tone it down.
And it was like, okay, you can only do so much, but it's like a lot of that stuff. Like even there were moments we were going through the research. Like it was so heavy. Like I had to go and listen and play a seat at the table, Solange Knowles, and cry in the room. Like I can't believe these people survived did this. You know, and then we act like.
And Bradford and I had a long talk about, you know, in the script, Paul, the white folks get away with it, which they do in all history, probably even in your script, they fucking get away with it. And so he was like, well, should we have them kill somebody? Like maybe Scales. And I was like, they got away with it.
Don't get too much of a plot away now.
But it's fine.
Okay.
But he convinced me to at least kill him off. You know, because I wasn't going to, because I wanted them all to get away with it, because that's what happened. They fucking all got away with it.
Burned it to the ground.
There was 37 white people.
And they had laws behind them to back them up.
You know?
This happened within like 2 or 3 years of the St. Louis riot.
Yeah, exactly.
Like 21,
and Chicago.
Yes.
And Chicago.
Yes.
And so I wanted it to be that. And they never found out who. They all got away with it. And that was the real shit. I want people to walk away with... Well, the hero didn't even kill him?
Save the day.
No, he didn't, you know?
I heard, I mean, this may be apocryphal, but I heard for, like, years and years, like, Oklahoma, like, specifically wouldn't even talk about it or teach it or anything. Yeah. And it wasn't until 20 years ago or 30 years ago, there were a few people left that finally started going, hey, you want to know what happened? Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
And then there's the way you interview the white guys. Like, that's why at the end, Sheriff Bennett says something about... you know, the whites want to remember this in a way like as if did it ever happen, and the blacks are like, well, should we talk about it? Are we going to be in trouble?
Right.
You know what I mean? So they had, he was telling us that rule.
Right.
You know, of why we don't know anything about this story.
Right.
And go ahead.
Jeff, I don't want to be too political, but that's why you have to pay attention to who's making your textbooks for history class.
Mm-hmm.
Because
for sure.
That isn't just an omission. I don't have to make up a thing to cover it. I just simply don't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you think, you don't think. You. Why would you? It just didn't happen. It was removed.
Correct.
And we have in Texas right now, where most of the textbooks come from, a very strong move to minimize and remove these sorts of events, including the advent of slavery in America.
Imported workers.
Right.
Well, all those textbooks that were like, it's a war, it was a war between the states.
Right.
Well, they don't talk about why.
And what were you fighting over?
It can be written off like if I say it and you see my face, you see I'm a black man and I'm saying these things. But I'm not speaking as a black person, I'm speaking as an American.
Mm.
You have to show the whole fucking tapestry. You have to show everything.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't, people make dumb errors. They back up into the wrong corners. They make the wrong political choices. You might be that racist who doesn't want to have that story told, and it may offend you in some way. Mm-hmm. But you want the full story told. You want your side told too, don't you? You want all sides told.
Yeah, more than anything, just to let people know, like, especially a lot of people. I know when we were talking about the movie Get Out, mm-hmm. and how they were saying there were white people who were offended by that. They said this is a reverse racist movie, and it's like, no, just don't be like those people. Yeah. Like, it's very
there
simple.
Were black people in the town.
Yeah, you know? Tulsa. So I like, look, what we're saying is not to beat it over people's heads. Like, just don't be like these people. This mm-hmm. shit happened. Let's not happen again. Mm-hmm. Even though we are living in our dystopian future right now with Trump, you know, and it's like, just don't be like that, you know.
Another 18 months.
And it's interesting for me to read the script and hear it and stuff when you come from all those people. Mm-hmm. You know, and I tell this people all the time when I go to places, it's like, I come from settlers, I come mm-hmm. from the enslaved, I come from people who, you know, had genocide that got put on them. So when you come from those three backgrounds, mm-hmm. you got to kind of like, you got to deal with that stuff. Like, all right, I got some settler relatives, yeah. and you know, you just deal with it, but it doesn't make me feel bad. Like, oh, I got some French and Italian. Yeah. It makes me feel like, hey, you know what? Don't be like that. You know, I'm the descendant that's a lot better than that.
Correct.
You know, that kind of thing, you know?
I'm with that.
That's what, it's fun. I haven't seen Get Out, but that's one of the things that it just always makes me shake my head because that keeps me from putting a gun in my mouth. When, you know, they say like, oh, that's you know, reverse racism or anything like that. But then, like, what you're saying is, no, just don't be like
just
that.
Just don't,
you know,
be like that person.
American History X. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, don't be like those people.
Yeah.
That's not, you know, right. There weren't people, you know, there weren't, I don't remember black people going, that was a racist film.
Right,
it's
right.
Like, that's some really bad people. Don't be like that.
Yeah.
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 Don't be like that.
That is the lesson.
Well, thank y'all. I appreciate all mm-hmm. you guys coming mm-hmm. and, you know, Paul.
And look at that. We got you 2 shows for 1.
Oh, we're gonna.
You can do it.
Yeah. I'm breaking this long ass
giant hole in my writing day. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you guys very much.
We'll be up late.
Where are you at, Linnell?
You can find me on Twitter at Linnell White.
So, Jeffrey.
That's it. Boom.
That's all you get now.
Your strange code phrases have confused me.
Or if you're really, I don't know. I don't know if I should put this out there, but like.
Just give me your address.
No. For those of you out there like me, who I was crushed by the loss of George Michael. I'm still not, and they haven't buried that man, whatever. So I've been like on Tumblr.
They haven't buried him yet?
What?
No, they have not buried him because they're still, I don't know. We need Scotland Yard on this. We need MI6.
Yeah.
We need James Bond. We need everybody on the case.
What are they
doing
with his body? How are they not burying him?
They're still trying to figure out what caused his death.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
what do they think it is?
I don't know. You have to talk to the coroner over.
Much too sexy for this world.
Too talented. So I've been like on Tumblr. Mm-hmm. I have a little Uncovering George Michael, and I've been just like,
oh, that's disgusting.
Trying to get my blogging like my thoughts and my regret.
The way you stalk a star is when there's
no.
Still
I'm not
alive.
Stalking him. She's just like paying homage. Yes. I'm paying homage. Like there are all these videos that are out there that
I didn't rip.
I never saw.
Same.
Yeah.
The videos.
Live performances.
Live performances. Interviews, and I'm just like, oh man, he was so great.
I love him. I love him.
This is the last time I'm going to share with you people.
I feel you. No, George Michael.
Where are you at,
listen,
Lisa?
Listen, George Michael was part of the three, the holy three.
Yes.
You know, the Thin White Duke, David Bowie.
Thank you.
And next month, Prince, a year has gone by already. And he had George Michael. It's been a year, yeah. So those three were like pivotal to
all
my
in
grown
2016.
Up. Yeah, all just, you know, all in 2016.
2016
so,
took a lot.
Yeah, it was brutal. So
2016 was a serial killer.
Yeah, it was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It really was. Mm-hmm. So I feel you on that. And I didn't realize that they were still trying to.
The fact that he hasn't been buried is like the closure's not.
Yeah,
not
like
really
I
there.
Thought, well, maybe they're trying to plan some big thing. And then the second part of me is like, there's
the
something going
the
on.
The medical examiner's holding his body.
Yeah.
That's
weird. Yeah.
Yes, it's
Christmas Day.
Bodies don't keep that long.
Like, they froze him.
Frozen.
The thing. If they're keeping him somewhere, then that must be some weird ass.
Yeah, I'm trying hard not to think about all the damage.
Where you at, Jeff Thorne?
Well, clearly I'm on Twitter from time to time at Game of Thorns. Game of Thorns. Oh, that way. Let me say it one more time in case that was wrong. Game of Thorns.
They know who you is, bitch.
At my website, which is about to be revamped, jeffreythorne.com. Mm-hmm. And I just reconstituted the Genre 19 Twitter and the Winterman Books, Twitter.
Yes. Okay. Sell it.
All of those places for Mosaic. Updates.
And Mosaic.
Mosaic comes out next Wednesday, but it will be too late for this, I think.
I'm dropping this tomorrow.
Oh, really? Yeah. So this Wednesday, go get you some Mosaic.
And if you haven't read this comic, get on it.
Because
one of the great things about it is it's a slow burn. You read those first couple issues, you're like, okay. And then it starts to suck you in.
Mm-hmm.
And
three, like you said.
Almost like it's my job to do that.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. You can get it on Comixology or on Amazon. Also, there's going to be a trade paperback in, I think, April or May for the first arc.
Okay.
So, you know, do your thing. But buy the floppies because that keeps the book alive.
Yes. Yes.
And if you don't buy the floppies, they kill the book. Very simple.
Mm-hmm.
Where you at, Chris?
I'm at shadowboxercinema.net. No new stuff yet.
No. Soon. What about your Twitter?
Oh, my Twitter is at unauthorizedCBD.
Cool. Polly Paul, our special guest today.
I'm always,
always
annoying people on Twitter. it's at Fizzhog. Two G's and two Z's.
Where did that come from again?
You don't want to know that.
Come on now.
Story. It's the worst origin story ever.
It's its own show. You need
okay, show. Okay. I'll let it slide.
It's bad. I'm on there ranting a lot.
We rant together from time to time.
All right, Lisa, where you at?
I'm always on Twitter. Mm-hmm. As y'all know, I was on Twitter last night? Yeah, because today's Sunday. Last night, after the reading, got back in time to hang out with my peeps. Hey, Geek Soul Brother, Geek Soul we were watching Crazy Head on Netflix and live tweeting the first two episodes. Hilarious. And so I'm always on Twitter. It's my name. What fresh hell's this? And come find me. Come holler at me. I will be down in Florida in a couple of weeks at ICFA, the International Festival for the Creative, something, whatever, it's Fantastic in the Arts, sorry. The International Conference for the Fantastic in the Arts. So that's where all the academic people get in and they talk about sci-fi. But really, it's an excuse for me to hang out with all my friends.
Okay, cool.
So, yay.
And I'm your host. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and drink a little bit.
Yeah.
Tequila on.
Yeah. Orlando. No, I'm pretty mild. But when I drink, it's high quality.
You couldn't even get through a table read without looking at the
table. You couldn't get through a table read without wine.
It's for Hilliard.
You drank for Hilliard?
The one person who doesn't drink.
No,
right?
I said not to drink. I didn't. I decided not to drink the shots for Hilliard.
But on another normal day.
Oh, hell yes. Top shelf.
No.
Funny.
Top.
Where are you and at, Hilliard?
Yeah. I am your host, Hilliard Guest. You guys can find me on Twitter at Hilliard Guest. Follow the show, ScreenwritersRR on Twitter. Any questions, ScreenwritersRentRoom@gmail.com. We probably gonna get some mail because y'all were saying some shit.
what? Us?
Y'all were saying some shit. I'm going to email every one of y'all the bullshit too.
Let Gwen show up.
I got something for her.
Exactly.
You're
going to
start bleeping out some stuff.
We don't bleep out nothing.
I said she could act.
This is raw shit.
We don't bleep out nothing.
Unfiltered.
I complimented the actors. They're very talented actors.
Any questions, screenwritersrentroom@gmail.com. The hubby's calling me. And what else? Follow us on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a 5-star review on iTunes. We need that for the metrics. And everybody, please join in with me. This will be a 2-part episode.
Yes.
What? Yes, sir. Join us on the show. We keep it real.
What?
We keep it opinionated.
Really?
We keep it what, everybody?
2017.
Peace, y'all.
Peace. Ciao.
Well, I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room. Wanna be a writer, well you gotta be a writer till your fears are diminishing, the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed. In the rent room, we let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Red Room.